It's Wednesday, the 27th of April, 2016. Happy birthday to George Gervin. Basketball Monster Show brought to you by Loot Crate and Jeff Mick. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to be like Jeff Mick and sponsor the podcast for a day, it's easy. All you need to do is leave a review on iTunes and you can become that sponsor. If you are watching this show live, which you can always do on YouTube for every show that goes to air, you can watch it live. And if you want to interact with the show live, you know what to do. You tweet at me using my Twitter handle, which is at redrock_bball. The little tweets will pop up on my screen here. I can see them as I'm recording and I can get to it and speak on any issues you may raise, any questions you might have, any points you wish to discuss, any rebuttals that you may have, all that sort of great stuff. We've got a good show today. I hope it's a good show. I'm less cranky, I'm less cantankerous than what I was yesterday. There'll be less ranting, hopefully. You know what, something might set me off, but I don't think so. I think I'm pretty good today. Yesterday I was in a little bit of a shitty mood at a few things that I noticed happening. But we're all good today. We've got a few things to talk about. We've got Tuesday's action to look back at. We've got Wednesday's games to preview. So
let's get to it.
Thank you, Michael Bolton. One thing that I would like to ask, though, now, I know the amount of people that listen to this show. I know there's thousands of you that are listening to this show. If I could ask for one favor from you people who are out there, and I know not everyone's going to do this, but I would love if you could get today's episode and share it. Retweet it on Twitter. If you're on Facebook, go and find the post on Facebook at facebook.com/redrockbasketball and share it there as well. Just get it out. I'd love to keep this show growing, and I know that there's thousands of people who are listening to this show. I'd love it if you could just do a favor, just retweet the show, share the show on Facebook. Just something like that helps enormously get it out to more eyes, and add your own little comment to it if you want. That would be fantastic if you could do that. It doesn't take very much time at all, and I would greatly appreciate it. Before we get into the action from Tuesday night, a couple of things that happened. Steve Kerr won the Coach of the Year. Now, he wasn't the guy that I picked for Coach of the Year, but absolutely no problem with it. He the team won 73 games. My issue with him was, okay, he didn't coach all the games, and I really loved what Greg Popovich had done, being able to change his scheme with new pieces coming in. But the more I think about it, the more I've heard people talk about it, the fact that Kerr wasn't on the sidelines shouldn't impact it at all, and I've changed my tune on this, because coaching, such a small percentage of coaching is done on the sidelines. It's done at practice. It's done in one-on-one meetings. It's done game planning. It's done preparing the other coaches. And Steve Kerr was doing all that. It wasn't like he was in hospital. He was for some of the offseason, but it wasn't like he was unable to participate at all. It's not like he had no phone. It wasn't like he was in a coma. He could communicate. He set all of this up. He was still orchestrating everything like a puppeteer behind the scenes. It was all Steve Kerr. Look, Luke Walton did a fantastic job and managed to keep things in check on game day. But Kerr still had a massive finger in the pie throughout the parts of the game where he wasn't officially the coach. So, yeah, for more of hearing that, the game day coaching is a small percentage of what he does. Absolutely fine to give it to him. The other news, and this is mainly just an excuse so I can play this.
What's that? Just
Stephen A. Smith is going to be without his old sparring partner. Skip Bayless has left ESPN, and that's fantastic. Obviously, hopefully that means the end of Stephen A. Smith as well, but that is literally just an excuse for me to play this three times.
What's that? Just Percentages.
There we go. The next thing, Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, out for the playoffs. Talked about it yesterday. It's terrible news for the Clippers, obviously. It's great for the Warriors. It's fantastic for the Trailblazers, who legitimately have a chance now to go through to a conference finals. Yes, they've still got to get past the corpse of the Clippers. They have to get past, well, they have to win a few games off the Steph Curry-less Warriors. But it's opened up brilliantly for those guys. The Warriors will be breathing a massive sigh of relief. It's extraordinarily unfortunate for the Clippers. And a couple of things, maybe I am going to get cranky here. A couple of things that annoy me. I tweeted out, it's really bad luck that for the Clippers, terrible bad luck. And someone tweeted back to me, oh, this was Cleveland. This was us last year in Cleveland. No, it wasn't, because if this was you in Cleveland, you would have had no LeBron James and you would have had no Kyrie. That's what you would have been left with, Kevin Love running around with J.R. Smith and Tim Mozgov. That's what the Clippers are left with. They're left with DeAndre Jordan and Austin Rivers. LeBron and Chris Paul, there's the parallel. LeBron carried this team, and it was a monstrous effort from LeBron. Fantastic. And yes, the Cavs did deal with injuries, but losing LeBron, losing Chris Paul and Blake Griffin is not the same as losing Kyrie and Kevin Love. Losing LeBron, yes, I would have said that. But anyway, I just don't want to hear the talk about Chris Paul being shit because he can't get out of the second round. He's still a great point guard. It's got nothing to do with that. I don't buy into that argument whatsoever. And the next thing I'm going to hear is we're going to hear people break up the Clips. I don't know why. Okay, they haven't won a championship. Cool. You know who hasn't won a championship? Every other team as well. If these guys didn't get injured, they were positioned for a legitimate shot at a championship. You were a good team. You know, one of the best 3-4 teams in the Western Conference, which they have been for the last 3 or 4 years. You're winning 55 games a season. You position yourself up the top of the standings. Something can happen. Things can go wrong, like Steph Curry injury. If Paul and Griffin stayed healthy, they should have beaten the Blazers. They could have gotten past the Warriors. They may have given the Spurs a run. Probably not, but they could have. And found themselves in a finals matchup against the Cavs. Or whoever else comes out of the East. Likely the Cavs. What do you get? You trade Blake Griffin away. Who do you get back? You get some draft picks. Cool. And that you might as well then trade Chris Paul away. You might as well trade DeAndre Jordan away. Because by the time that those draft picks and young assets that you get back for Blake Griffin become good, Paul's going to be finished. Jordan's going to be 32-plus-year-old center who provides nothing apart from rebounding. What's the point of it? Do you really think that you can get better in the short term by trading Blake Griffin or Chris Paul? The answer has to be no. I can't see how you can get better by trading one of those guys. Yeah, you might say you're going to set yourself to be better in 6 years' time. But when you've got a team who's actually good, and this comes back to my championship argument from yesterday, 29 teams don't win a championship every season. Is the season a failure if you don't win the championship? Is providing entertainment to your fans and being a perennially good team, yes, it's frustrating, but being a perennially good team who was right up there challenging and just waiting for something to break their way, is that a worse option than having this team that's good and going, you know what, we're just going to give it all away? I would be stunned if something happened. It could very well happen, but I don't think it's the right move, and I don't like all the calls. Break up the clips. It doesn't make sense to me. I'm not on board with that, but it very well could happen, so you could be very right there. It's just not the way that I would be approaching it. Let's get into the action now. From Tuesday, there were only 2 games. We're going to look at the monstrous line of the night, and that goes to Paulie George of the Indiana Pacers. He played 41 minutes and was massive. 39 points, 8 rebounds, 8 assists, 2 steals, a block, 5 triples. Super efficient from George. Hit all 12 of his free throws. He went 11 of 19 from the field as well. It looked like the Pacers had this one wrapped up until a ferocious Raptors comeback got them over the line. It's a heartbreaking loss for the Pacers. This could be the win that really wraps up this series for Toronto. They head back to Indiana for Game 6, needing that to seal the deal. That is a huge comeback, and it would have been a terrible, terrible loss for the Raptors to lose that, because the Pacers would have been in that position going home, needing to win at home to get themselves through to the second round. This is, I think, could really demoralize the Pacers. But we're talking Paul George. He was fantastic. He has been fantastic throughout the whole playoffs. Just been remarkable. And Matt Smith tweeted this out today. To think how good Paul George has been coming back this season from that horrific leg injury is one of the more remarkable medical recoveries I've ever seen. We've seen plenty of people who have had leg injuries very similar to Paul George who have either not been able to resume their career at all, who have been, you know, a 70% player of what they were prior to the injury, or have had continual injury issues throughout the rest of their career, you know, compensatory muscle problems and all that sort of stuff. Paul George is an absolute freak. He's come back better than ever, which is it's amazing that he can be better than he was before he broke his leg, but it is legitimately what he is. I remember a couple of seasons ago I was having an argument with someone on Twitter saying that I believe Paul George was a better player than Carmelo Anthony. This was in the season before he broke his leg, and I was getting called a whole host of rude names. But look at him. Look how good he is. He is absolutely fantastic, and this is a true tribute to what he's been able to do as a player. Hard work and remarkable healing powers, Wolverine-esque, you might say. Tremendous from Paul George. The DFS value play of the day goes to Thabo Sefolosha of the Atlanta Hawks. He was a minimum salary player. The Hawks had a smashing of Boston, a real blowout victory there. Another one of those. That's a 3 in a row. in Atlanta that the Hawks have ended up smashing the Celtics. Thabo played 20 minutes the game. They were able to get a lot of their subs into the game, the Hawks. He had only 6 points, but 5 rebounds, 6 assists, and 3 steals is a tremendous performance from Thabo. That totaled him 26 FanDuel points. I'm not sure that that's going to be something I'm going to be relying upon in Game 6 or moving forward, but a nice night if for some reason you decided to have him in your lineup. On the flip side, the DFS start of the night has to be Isaiah Thomas. He put up 9.7 FanDuel points in his 29 minutes. So yes, he did suffer an injury. He did suffer an ankle sprain, which apparently, according to Isaiah, he will be fine and he will play in Game 6. But it wasn't the ankle injury. He played 29 minutes. He had 7 points, 3 assists. He went 3 of 12 from the field. He went 1 of 3 from the free throw line. He turned it over 3 times. He had 4 fouls. He was just really bad. And he was great in the 2 games in Boston. He struggled the 3 games on the road. A really horrible option, horrible result of an option Isaiah Thomas put forward in Tuesday's game. See, a couple of extra people have joined the live show now. You know that if you want to tweet me during these live shows, tweet at me at redrock_bball, and we can have our discussions there. Let's look at the perfect DFS lineup now from Tuesday's games. At point guard, Kyle Lowry at 28.3 and Georgie Hill at 25.9. That's 2 good ones in a row from Hill. They have changed how they're running their offense slightly, and it has resulted in more play from Hill. At shooting guard, DeMar DeRozan finally got out of the doldrums. He put up 41.6, while Kyle Korver went for 24.9. The Celtics can't seem to stop Kyle Korver at all, yet everyone in the league throughout the season was able to figure out a way to slow him down. Paulie George went for 63.6, and Thabo had 26. At power forward, Miles Turner went for 28.1. He's looked a lot better in the last couple. Paulie Millsap, despite not his best game and the minutes being limited, he still finds his way into the perfect DFS lineup, putting up 30.6 points. And Bismack Biyombo, the surprise performer, going for 29.7 in a bench role, who actually played over Jonas Valanciunas in that comeback down the stretch. That lineup, with only 2 games on the slate, would have netted you 298.7 points on FanDuel. All right, we're going to take a quick break for a word from our sponsor today, which is Loot Crate. And by now, you should know that Loot Crate is a monthly subscription box service. It's for epic geek and gamer items and pop culture gear. It's less than $20 a month, and you get 6 to 8 items, including licensed gear, apparel, collectibles, and unique one-of-a-kind items. Each month, they change the theme of what box they're sending you. Last month was Quest. We're still waiting to see what May's one is going to be. But if you want to check out all the stuff that Loot Crate offers, head across not to lootcrate.com. Don't Google Loot Crate. Just type this address into your address bar, lootcrate.com/redrock. Redrock is one word, and that tells the guys at Loot Crate that you came from listening to this podcast. That's another tremendous way that you can help support the podcast. If you love this sort of stuff, if you know someone who loves this, if you've got birthdays coming up, Mother's Day, whatever it is that you need to buy a gift for, we've got a coupon code as well. It's $3 off any new subscription, and the coupon code is REDROCK, so make sure you're using that. Check out lootcrate.com/REDROCK. Check out all the stuff they have over there. Help the podcast out. Get yourself a great deal. It is an absolute win-win for everybody. Okay, let's talk about these games now in a little bit of extra detail. The first one was the Pacers and the Raptors. So Miles Turner back starting with LaVoy Allen on the bench. Allen played a total of 59 seconds, and that's probably bordering on too much. Turner played 35 minutes, and he's looked solid the last couple of games. 14-8 for Miles. He had 3 blocks. He shot the ball well. He's going to be up and down. It's a rookie in his first playoff series. This stuff will happen. But I really like what we're seeing from Miles Turner. He's going to be an impact player moving forward in fantasy and in the NBA. The problem with him in DFS is his price is quite high. We're talking close to $6,000. And his reliability is pretty low. Georgie Hill has said another good game. He played 34 minutes for 15 points. He contributed all across the box score. While Monte Ellis was putrid. After 2 massive games in Toronto, has had 3 duds, 8-4-3. And my boy, Solo Hill, it finally happened. He played 30 minutes. He had 11-6 with 3 triples. That is, you know, for minimum salary, that's almost as good as you can get. That's a 20-point. Was it 20 points? Before I start talking, I should probably check that up. 18.2 FanDuel points, which is giving you 5x value. So it's not a bad performance. And this is, he's going to get these minutes. Indiana has not shied away from it. He's playing 28 to 30 minutes off the bench each night. Yamahimi still struggling with that back problem, battled foul trouble here as well, 4 fouls in 19 minutes, so that limited his playing time. But even with Mahimi not getting on the court, we saw no Jordan Hill whatsoever, and we saw just 59 seconds of Lavoie Allen. So the front court rotation is pretty clearly Mahimi, it's Turner, and it's Solomon Hill. That's the way that obviously Paul George can play a little bit of the four as well. That's what they're doing with their rotation. Rod Stuckey was dreadful. He was 1 of 10 in 22 minutes. He has provided basically nothing all season after pretty much a breakout year last year. On the Raptors, DeMar DeRozan, his best game of the series, 40 minutes for 34 points. He shot the ball well. He got to the line 13 times, which he'd struggled to do as well. Not much in the peripheral areas, 3 rebounds and 2 assists, but a big night there. And Bismack Biyombo played the 24 down the stretch, went 10 and 16, grabbing some key boards, some key offensive rebounds as well. Not sure this is going to translate into anything moving forward, but he was part of the comeback and he was fantastic for them. Corey Joseph back to his 23-minute role after only 14 in Game 4. 8 points, two steals, a block, a 3. A nice night. Well, Valanciunas just went 11-5, but he had 2 blocks in his 23 minutes. His minutes will rise in the next game with that. It's unlikely Biyombo gets 24 again. Lowry, who was substandard, 14-4-5 and another poor shooting night. And I do enjoy that Normie Powell got 28 minutes. They completely excised Luis Scola from the rotation. They started Patrick Patterson. He played 26 minutes. They had Damari Carroll played 26 minutes. And Normie Powell back in the rotation went 10-4 with 2 steals. You know, I've been a big Powell fan for all season. Didn't like the way they cut him out of the rotation. He needed to be playing more than Terrence Ross. He did again here. And it's unrealistic to think that he's going to get 28 minutes each night, but he should be a 20-minute guy for the majority of the playoffs now, as long as Toronto is still in. The second game was a smashing. Boston and Atlanta. With such a lopsided game, it's hard to, you can't read anything into the rotations because bench guys were playing. And we can see here because Jordan Mickey played 9 minutes, so that's all you need to know from the Celtics side of things. Evan Turner was still good. Jurepko was solid, 6-8 in 24 minutes. Jay Crowder played 28 minutes. Marcus Smart not able to repeat the heroics of Game 4, but still not bad. 10-2-2 in 25 minutes. Terry Rozier played 26 minutes. Don't expect this to happen all that often. If it happens in the next game, the Celtics are going home. But that's why when we look at this rotation, look at this box score, it was a smashing. So don't think this is, or are the Celtics going to run this sort of thing? Is Tyler Zeller going to play 12 minutes? No, he's not. Same thing on the Hawks. Nobody played 30 minutes. We saw Chris Humphries get his first playoff action. Lamar Patterson played 9 minutes. Mike Muscala got 14 minutes. Everything was spread right out, which obviously was not ideal for DFS. Kent Bazemore had 16 points in his 23 minutes. He has been up and down. He is a real tough cash game guy to look at. He is more of a tournament guy. He had 5 points in Game 4. He had 16 points in this one in 17 less minutes. Really tough to project. But I did like what Mike Scott's done. He's always been a really interesting punt option as a in a tournament. He played 22 minutes here, went 17-5 with 2 threes and a steal. He's easily been the best big man off the bench for this team. Some nights he's the only big man off the bench. Humphries or Muscala don't even get in. It's all Scott. And one of these nights he's going to catch hot like he did here. So 7-9. And you've got to remember that next time the Hawks play in one of your tournament lineups, just put Scott in as a minimum guy. Maybe he catches fire. Because it's all coming down, much like Solomon Hill. Opportunity. Is he getting a constant role? Can he microwave? Can he heat up quickly? And Mike Scott's that guy who fits that bill pretty precisely, I would say. All right, we're going to take a look now at the games we're going to preview for Wednesday. I'm going to take a quick break for a word from one of our sponsors, and then we're going to get straight into those games and help you set a DFS lineup. All right, the first one is the Portland Trailblazers and Los Angeles Clippers. There's a lot of DFS value here, but FanDuel has adjusted their prices already. We know the situation with the Clippers. I spoke about that already. Let's talk the point guards. Well, actually, the Blazers, it's in Los Angeles. The Blazers are favored by 3, so a massive swing here. Total of 197.5. At point guard, Austin Rivers is at 4,000. And overall for this slate, I reckon you're going to be better off choosing cheap point guards. There's two or three cheap point guards out there and spending up at some other positions. Austin Rivers at 4,000, you should be able to expect 30 points from Rivers. Yes, he can have bad nights, but we've seen when he played last year's playoffs, this year when Chris Paul was out, when he has to play in front of Chris Paul, he might not be a great on-court player, but he can rack up stats. He won't be as red hot as he was in one of those games down the stretch. I think the Utah game when he was just ludicrous and hitting threes from out of nowhere. But he does rack up numbers. And at 4,000, you'd have to project that he gets over 20 points. He's one of the guys, his salary jumped by $500. On the other side, Damian Lillard, we've been a little bit hesitant to use Lillard because he hasn't been great, to be honest. He's averaging 31 across the last three. He's priced at 8,000. But you know who's not guarding him anymore? And that's Chris Paul. And that was one of the biggest issues or concerns for what Lillard's been able to do is, you know what, he's got Chris Paul on him. Well, he doesn't anymore. He's got Austin Rivers on him. And that is going to allow Lillard to hopefully have a big game. So I'm all about getting Lillard involved. Pablo Prigioni is going to have to play some minutes now, but it's not going to be enough to have much of an impact, I don't think. At shooting guard, I mentioned on yesterday's show that Ben Bolch, I think it was, that said that Jamal Crawford was going to start. Well, Crawford isn't going to start from what we understand. It's going to be Rivers starting. But at 4,800, he's had a $600 rise in his salary. I do like getting him in, though, because we saw in the few games that he did start in the season, or when he has to play a bigger role, he should be able to exceed 25 points or at least get close to it. At 4,800, I think he's one of the better guys out there. JJ Redick's salary has stayed at 4,200. He's not getting enough playing time. He's averaging just 13 points across the three games. His heel is bothering him. Maybe he has to push through and play 30-plus, but the last two games, the Clippers were getting done, and he didn't get out there. He just isn't able to play big enough minutes to be a real concern at the moment. CJ McCollum, like Dame Lillard, defense has been a concern. Now, Redick is still there, and he's still been a good defender, but his injury is not ideal. And without Paul there to switch on to, you get a choice between Redick and Crawford or Rivers. Things should be looking up for McCollum. Now, his salary's dropped. He's under 7,000, so it's 6,900. I do really like McCollum. He had to put up a big one. Alan Crabb was red hot in the last game. That totaled 11 FanDuel points. It was red hot, and it gave you 11 FanDuel points. I'm not buying into him, nor am I buying into Gerald Henderson. At small forward, Al-Farouq Aminu was absolutely ridiculous in the last game. He is now a $6,000 player. Yes, he did put up 52 points in that last game, but do you really expect Al-Farouq Aminu to again set a career high? I absolutely don't. So I don't think I know that I won't be interested in using Al-Farouq Aminu and expecting that sort of return. But at 6,000, is it worth looking at? He's averaging 29 points across his last five games, including the last one in the regular season. It's not a terrible one to look at. He's okay to look at, but now that he's up to 6,000, it makes it a bit harder. Mo Harkless at 5,100, he's been solid, but he's not really getting to that 5,100 value point. Not a massive fan. Jeff Green is the other one we're going to look at. He is going to start in place of Blake Griffin. He is priced at 3,800. You would expect 30 minutes out of Jeff Green. You could get a 40-point night. You could get a 7-point night from Jeff Green. It's going to be tough to trust him in cash, but at 3,800, you have to feel relatively confident that he's going to get you 17 or 18 points. So not a complete write-off for cash, but an absolutely great tournament option at that 3,800 price point. Wes Johnson will get some extra minutes, but not enough for me to get too excited. 3,500, he's nothing more than a tournament punt. Paul Pierce in the same boat. And Luke Marmute will get extra minutes, but it's not going to translate into fantasy points. At power forward, no Griffin, obviously. We've got Ed Davis as the only eligible power forward on the roster. It's Jeff Ayers for the Clippers, but I'm not expecting Jeff Ayers to get much playing time. Eddie Davis put up 23 points in the last game. He's at 3,700. Hasn't really been living up to expectations so far in this series. Maybe consider him, but I think you're going to have better options out there. You know, Jeff Green are the cheap option. The point guards as cheap options is probably where you want to skimp on cash. At center, both of these guys are in play here. DeAndre Jordan at 8,000, he's going to have to do quite a bit. He's not a big offensive creator, as we know, but they're going to have to get it into him as much as possible. So Jordan at 8,000, I think 40 points is not a crazy thing to go for. Love that there. And Mason Plumlee has been amazing. He's averaging 42 across the last three games. He's at 6,100 now. Fine with using Mason Plumlee as well. Yeah, 30 points he's got to get. It doesn't feel crazy for him to go out there and put that up on most nights. Kyle Aldridge at 3,500. I don't think much changes for Aldridge. He's not going to be able to play next to DeAndre Jordan for more than a couple of minutes, if at all. He would be really superb if Jordan obviously was out, but Griffin's out and Paul's out. It's not going to be Aldridge, I think, that picks up the slack, so I'm not interested there. Chris Kaman's been playing, and I don't know why. The next game is the Charlotte Hornets and the Miami Heat. The Heat are favored by 6 points. The total here is 193, so obviously we're looking at a pretty low total. The series, again, this one is tied up 2-2. At point guard, Goran Dragic is at 6,400. There is literally no other point guard that's priced between 5,000 and 7,500 on Wednesday's slate. So if you're looking to go mid-price, you have to go Dragic. It's not the route that I would be recommending to go. I would be looking to go cheap at point guard, but Dragic is a guy who's had a really subpar series, but eventually he's going to have to drop a 30-pointer. And at 6,400, this could be the one. They're back at home in Miami. Not a terrible play, but probably not the best idea in building a roster. Kemba Walker has been great the last three games. He's averaging 42 points. He had 49 in the last one. I'm assuming that Nick Batum is out of this game. He's still listed as questionable. I don't think he'll play. So Kemba at 8,200, you'd have to feel pretty confident of Kemba at least approaching 40 points. The other point guards, no such interest. The shooting guards, Courtney Lee, he's going to play big minutes, assuming Batum is out, which I am, but it doesn't translate into fantasy stats. He is at 3,800, so maybe he gets 21, 22 points, which is not a big stretch. He could be useful. I do like Jeremy Lin at 4,800. He only had a salary rise of $100. You should feel relatively confident of getting at least 25 from Lin, given he should have a bigger role with Batum out. Joshie Richardson at 4,000, nothing's going his way at the moment. And not on my radar. Dwayne Wade at 7,700. He's been rock solid throughout the playoffs. You're going to get 35 points most nights from Dwayne Wade, and that's not a bad result if you are looking to spend up. I would rather spend up, say, on a Dwayne Wade than take a Goran Dragic at point guard. That's the way that I would like to run that. At small forward, Marv Williams at 5,000 has had just three abysmally terrible games, one massive game. He's at 5,000. It's a really, really nice salary. It is not going to be reliable for cash, but in a tournament at 5,000, what if Marvin Williams can go for 30? He can go for 34. I think that he is worth looking at in that sort of situation, but he's been tough to rely upon. Justice Winslow is not really doing much, and Joe Johnson had a big game in game four, had done nothing prior to that, though. He's at 4,700. It's okay at 4,700, but it's not something that I'm massively interested in. At power forward, again, we're assuming Batum's out, so Kaminsky, I think, should get another start. He's at 3,600. He'd really failed to live up to expectations in the last game. I think he'll bounce back and have at least a 20-point performance, so I do like Frank Kaminsky at 3,600. Luol Deng at 66 has just been that solid 27 to 30-point guy on most nights. I think you can consider him if you're looking to spend just a little bit of cash. You know, sub 7,000, not a bad salary. At center, that's Hassan Whiteside we're looking at here. He's one of the better center options on the board, especially considering his salary has dropped by 300. He reckons that he is going to be a little bit more nimble after that. He was a bit stiff in game four with that thigh issue. He thinks he'll be a bit better. He was a little bit disappointing in that game four. The game was a blowout, though. Whiteside at 8,300, back at home. I feel pretty confident of him approaching 40 points. If I'm spending 8,000, though, I'm taking Jordan and not Whiteside, but Whiteside is still of use. Cody Zeller, too unreliable, and Al Jefferson at 5,700, it's just too expensive for what we can expect from him. The last game of the night, the Houston Rockets and the Golden State Warriors. The Warriors at home, where they're, well, not where, because I don't know why I said where, they're not my team. The Warriors are favored by 9.5. The total is 211.5. You're throwing with these cheap point guards, you got Austin Rivers in there. Sean Livingston is another great option. He's at 4,400. He's averaging 29.5 across the last three games. You should be able to get 25 plus out of Livingston. He should be in consideration in all lineups. So should Pat Beverley, who is going to play. He's at 4,800. Not as interested in Beverley as I am in Rivers or in Livingston. They're two guys I would much prefer to use over Beverley, but he's a contrarian option you could run into a tournament. Jason Terry, no thanks. And we know unfortunately there's no Steph. But being that there's no Steph, when we look at shooting guards, then Klay Thompson is at 7,600. You feel pretty confident that you're going to get 35-plus out of Thompson on nights when Curry's not there. The other guy you can go for, if you've gone real cheap at point guard, is Jim Harden. He's at 10,500. You're going to get 50-plus out of Harden, unless, and this is probably why I wouldn't use Harden, if this game is over in the third quarter or the start of the fourth, how much effort do you think Harden's going to put in? That's the concern to me. Maybe he goes, you know what, this season's done, I'm not doing it. If the game's close, I imagine he can put up a 65-pointer. But I have a little bit of a concern that the Warriors do blow it out and that Harden is really limited down the stretch. That's my concern. So, look, it depends. If I've got 10,000 left or 10,500 left and I'm trying to fill a shooting guard spot, I'm taking Harden over Clay. It's straightforward. If I've saved enough money at other areas. But if I want to save that extra 3,000, I think that Klay Thompson's probably a better use of the money. And then I've got 3,000 to spend somewhere else. But if I can't find the 3,000 to spend somewhere else, I'll go back and I'll put Harden in. That's the way you should approach this. Ian Clark's going to probably get a little bit of extra run. He's not going to be really worth much of a fantasy option, nor is Brandon Rush, nor is Leandro Barbosa. At small forward, Harry Barnes at 4,400. I'm done with Harry. Forget about it. I do like Andre Iguodala. He is at 4,300. He is $100 less than Barnes. He's averaging 28 points across the three games, or the last three games. He dropped 35 in the last one. He's going to take up some of Steph's ball handling and distributing stats too. At 4,300, you should be pretty confident you're going to get 20-plus out of Iggy. Trevor Reza has been a complete disappointment in this season. He has been invisible. He's at 5,500. You should leave him as invisible in your lineups. And Mick Beasley has played close to 20 minutes in the last two games, taken over the role from Josh Smith. It is still a complete mess, this team. Beasley at 3,800. I don't really think there's a lot of upside in using him. At power forward, we've got Donatas Motiejunas, who's played 25-plus minutes in the last two games. He's had one great game, one mediocre game. Not all that interested in using him at 3,700, but he's definitely a tournament option. Draymond at 8,800. I think you've almost got to try and lock him into most of your lives. It could easily go bust, as it did in Game 3, but Draymond at home should be a really tough one to handle for the Rockets. Spates at 3,600. Maybe if you expect Boker to fail out again, I'd be okay with Spates, but I'm not keen. Capella, Josh Smith, no thanks. At center, Andy Bogut is a real cheap price center. I don't think center's the place you want to really go cheap, though, in this slate. But if you are, Bogut's the guy to look at 4,300. You might get 20 points out of him. I don't imagine you get much more than that, maybe 25. It's okay. Dwight Howard at 6,900. I do like Dwight at 69. I think you get 30-plus out of him, potentially 35 at 6,900. He's looked a lot better these last couple of games. That is it for the games. Let's look at the DFS picks of the day now. At point guard, it is Austin Rivers at 4,000, Goran Dragic at 64, and Dame Lillard at 8,000. At shooting guard, Jamal Crawford, 48, CJ McCollum, 69, and Klay Thompson, 7,600. At small forward, Jeffrey Green, 38, Marvin Williams, 5,000, and there is no high-priced small forward that I'm interested in. Power forward, Frank Kaminsky, 36, Luol Deng, 66, and Draymond Green, 8,800. And the centers, Andy Bogut, 43, Mason Plumlee, 61, and DeAndre Jordan, 8,000. Don't forget to visit today's sponsor, which is Loot Crate at lootcrate.com/redrock, and follow me on Twitter at redrock_beeble. Of course, you know all about basketballmonster.com, the best, if I do say so myself, fantasy basketball site in the world. Check us out over there and our DFS projections, which are available for $14.95 for the entire playoffs. You can follow us on Twitter at basketballmonster, at baskmonster, for all up-to-date injury news, lineup adjustments, all that sort of stuff over there. And if you missed the start of the show, if you could do me a huge favor, if you could just share this show out on social media, give it a retweet, add a comment onto it, share it on your Facebook page, one of those things, it would be tremendous if I could just get, you know, if I could get 1,000 people to do it, it would be absolutely amazing for the podcast. It's probably not going to happen, but it would be fantastic to see if you guys could really help. And I don't think I ask for much. I think I provide some decent entertainment, some decent information, and that would be awesome if you guys could help me in that regard, just to help get the show out to more people. All right, we are done for today's show, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.